You know the vibes. Welcome back to another episode of the Hoop Genius Podcast, brought to you by NBA 2K24. It's myself, Mo Mootsy, back again, the one and only GM extraordinaire, Mr. Scott Perry. How you doing, Scott?
I'm doing great, Mo. You know what's interesting? I noticed when you do that, you know the vibes and that energy is high. I can tell you just had some wings to eat. Because I think the wings really fuel your energy, Mo.
How did you know?
Exactly. Yeah, so now the listening public understands the fuel of choice,
of course,
for Mr. Mo Mootsy.
I need Wingstop or Nando's or someone to holler at me with a brand.
Absolutely.
This is how I be living. This is how I really be living it. I be living exactly it every day. But no, these ones I made myself. Made them in the oven.
You made them yourself?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, I came to my chef bag. Mo, you guys don't even know.
Mo, I didn't know you had that in your game.
Oh, no. Come on, man. I get busy in the kitchen.
Okay.
It's not the only place I'll be cooking, Scott. I know my way around the kitchen very well. Do you know what I'm saying? I think
I love it.
I think if you're a gentleman, you got to know your way around the kitchen. You know what I'm saying?
I understand. Be able to, now, you know, there was a time, Mo, yours truly, mm-hmm, I could do a little damage in the kitchen now.
Chef
and I
Perry.
Mean, good damage by the. And you can ask some players, actually, around this league, especially players from back when the time I was working in Detroit. I used to host team dinners where I would cook.
Oh, okay.
For all the fellas and their families and stuff. And we would get it in.
What's the signature dish? What's on the menu?
Well, I'm gonna take it. It wasn't the healthiest at that time. See, my wife won't let me cook like this anymore, but I used to fry catfish.
Oof.
We would do macaroni and cheese. You know, I'd fry chicken as well too. More southern based.
Scott, I'm pulling up.
Hey, you pulling up?
Mo,
you come here all the way from London. I'm gonna let go of the good eating, the good dieting right now. And I'm gonna fry you some catfish up, and I'll do it like I used to do it,
man. And now we talking,
make it work exactly.
Now we talk. I'll be cooking up all this Middle Eastern, Mediterranean food right now. That's the vibe that I want. You know what I'm saying? So we'll get busy with it. I hope you guys enjoyed that insight into Scott and I in the kitchen.
Exactly.
And if you guys are missing BJ, I already know what he would say in this situation. He would just talk about his barbecue and the ribs that he makes on it, because that's his cooking.
BJ is the grill master, so that's what we're missing. Yeah, we're gonna let BJ have the grill.
Yeah, I'll leave that to him. I'm not old enough to get that title of the grill master quite yet, but
right.
But Scott, we got to talk about what's been cooking in the NBA.
Let's do it.
Your former team, man. I almost slipped in a horrible segue there. I almost said your former team has been cooking the books, but they haven't. They've been negotiating legally a new contract with Jalen Brunson, who has shocked the world by signing a 4-year, $156.5 million contract. Now, you might hear that and think that's a crazy amount of money, but it's $113 million less than he's eligible to sign if he had just waited for 1 year from now. Mm-hmm. So he's left over $100 million on the table. I can't fathom what that's like, Scott. That just doesn't compute in my brain. And we were having a chat before about, has this ever happened in NBA history? Because, you know, like LeBron, D-Wade, and Bosch all took a million or two less when they went to Miami to accommodate each other. And Dirk Nowitzki, towards the end of his career, he took massive pay cuts to try and build a team to win a second championship. But we haven't really seen anyone leave $100 million on the table.
No, this is historic, Mo. There's no question about it. It's an historic decision by Jalen Brunson and his family. And look, nobody knows the situation and what they're trying to get accomplished better than Jalen Brunson. I'm sure that the Knicks organization is very pleased with this decision and, quite frankly, this sacrifice, because this is a lot of money that he's leaving on the table. And there's always that potential and, you know, God forbid, a knock on wood, but there could be some sort of injury that would impact his ability to maybe get a bigger contract down the line where he can, quote unquote, recoup you know, some of this money that he left on the table.
Because this has set him up for a four-year, $323 million extension in 2028, or a five-year, $418 million deal in 2029, if he waits until then.
Right, but you, now you're looking at 2028, he'll be turning 32, I believe, right? In 20, so because Jalen is what, 27 right now?
Yeah, he'll be 28 when the season starts.
28 when the season starts. So then when the next contract was up, you know, you're talking about 4 years from now.
Yep.
You're looking at a guy turning 32, or the five-year deal you mentioned, turning 33. Now, he keeps himself in tremendous condition. He's a pro's pro. And so I'm sure that he's banking and hoping that he will still be playing at the same level and physically feeling the same so that he can cash in to that level. But there's a lot, you know, that has to happen between now and then to make sure he secures that. What this does, obviously, for the Knicks in this short term, and what I mean by short term, over the next 3 to 4 years, this is going to really help them be able to keep the core of this team together, which is, you know, arguably one of the top two or three teams in the Eastern Conference. And by in doing that, now you just traded for Mikal Bridges, who will be, you know, up for an extension as well. You got to figure that he's going to stay. They already had done a new deal with OG Anunoby.
5 years, 212.5.
Well, man, yeah, OG, he's the highest paid player on the team now. Mm-hmm. And then you have Julius Randle, who I believe will be extension eligible coming up next season. And so to keep that core group together, and then the other Villanova guys, you got Dante DiVincenzo, Josh Hart. So this group, and we talked about this last week, Mo, the beauty of the group is that they're so together and they're so cohesive. And they're banking on this cohesion to be able to, at minimum, have this team in the conference finals over this next 3 to 4 year run, with the hope during that 3 to 4 year run, they get out of the Eastern Conference into the finals with the hopes of trying to win a championship. So that's what's all at play here. That's what Jalen, I'm sure, had on his mind when he was making the decision. How can we keep this thing together? If I'm going to make this big sacrifice, we've got to keep this core together. And they know their time is now. Mm-hmm. So it will be interesting to see how this plays out for him.
So I did a quick Google, and Jalen Brunson obviously taking a $100 million pay cut by not accepting the full maximum that he could have got.
I think it was 113 million.
Crazy. Mm-hmm. Here are some of the other All-NBA players who have taken less money and how much they took less. Tim Duncan in 2007 took $11 million less than the max to keep Manu Ginobili and Tony Parker. Mm-hmm. Kevin Durant on Golden State took $10 million less to keep Sean Livingston and Andre Iguodala in Golden State in 2017. And LeBron James took $2.6 million less on his two-year deal to avoid the second apron for the Los Angeles Lakers this offseason. But what's interesting about that is Brunson's deal keeps the Knicks out of that second apron.
Yes.
Now, for you guys listening, thinking, what on earth is a second apron and why is this so important? Scott, do you want to break down some of the penalties that come along with this? Because you have the salary cap, which is the amount of money that teams can spend on their player salaries. Mm-hmm. And then if you exceed that, you go into the first apron and there's certain penalties for exceeding that. Mm-hmm. And if you exceed that by an even larger amount, you go into the second apron where the consequences are more harsh. But if you want to help explain, I guess, to some of the people who are a bit confused right now, talking about the CBA, collective bargaining agreement, and the second apron, why that's so important to building a team.
Well, just to, not to get overly technical, Mo, but to really put it in plain English, folks, you get into that second apron, there'll be very little that you can do in terms of being able to improve your basketball team. You, for instance, so if you want to trade for a player and you're in that second apron, you cannot take back more money. So if there's a player that you like that makes $15 million. And so you st- let's say that you have a player on your team that you're willing to trade and he's at $14 million. You can't take him back when you're in the second
round. And you can't combine salaries in trades.
And you can, and I was like, and you can't combine salaries to make that. So you can't aggregate the two. It has to be a one-to-one deal.
Mm-hmm.
So that that becomes, that in itself, hugely problematic. And then also, if you stay in the second apron for consecutive seasons, now you get into a situation where your draft pick 7 years out becomes frozen, your first round pick. And by that means frozen, you can't trade it.
And it's locked in at 30th. Am I
yeah,
right?
Yes, and right. And it's locked in at 30th. So, I mean, Mo, it's, you then are stuck with your roster, essentially. That's what the second apron is going to mean for most teams. What you see on paper pretty much is going to be your team. You won't be able to use traded player exceptions. You're in that second apron, mm-hmm. you know. So the teams,
just for mm-hmm. context, that are currently mm-hmm. over the second apron are the Golden State Warriors, the Los Angeles Clippers, the Phoenix Suns, the Celtics, the Bucks, and the Timberwolves. Okay. Although some of them may have changed in the last couple of weeks. That was the last time I looked at it. But those are the teams who are over the second apron, and the Knicks and the Lakers, Nuggets and the Heat are dangerously close to hitting it. So it's going to be tough to, if you're the Phoenix Suns, for example, or if you're the Los Angeles Clippers, it's very tough for you to improve. So if you're going to be a second apron team, you have to be locked in knowing that this is the group we think can win a championship, like what the Boston Celtics did.
Exactly.
So my question to you is now, Scott, because Jalen's taken this discount and they've avoided that second apron, do you think there's still one more move that the Knicks want to make to go all in and have that championship team? And if so, what do you think that move might be?
Mm-hmm. I believe that they have pretty much what they need to compete and challenge to get out of the Eastern Conference and get to the finals to compete for the championship. The only reservation I have now is the depth at the center position. Now, when they lost Isaiah Hartenstein, Mitchell Robinson, as you know, and listeners on this show know how fond I am of Mitchell Robinson as a player and just his story and how he's grown and, you know, going back to the days that when we first drafted him. But the reality of Mitchell is that he has missed a lot of time over his 6-year career due to injuries. Case in point, this past season, where he only played 20 games and had two surgeries on the same ankle. So it's a big if when I say if he can give them 65 to 70 games in the regular season and be healthy through the playoffs, then they'll be fine at the position. But that's a big if. So going on past history, they've got to have someone very reliable to back him up and that's going to fit what they do. And it's no secret in Tom Thibodeau coach teams that he wants not only his starting center, but his backup center to be able to do a couple things. That is protect the rim, anchor his defense on the interior, and then be able to offensively get to the offensive glass and be a guy, a finisher in and around that dunker spot. So they have yet to fill that with a reliable player yet. Now, Jericho Sims is there who has shown flashes, but I don't believe right now that he is the player they're saying we're comfortable with in being able to provide that. If Mitchell were to go down for an extended period of time, they'd be leaning that position. So that's the only area that I really worry about. We didn't get a chance. Also, we didn't get a chance to see Julius Randle play with this group in the playoffs this past year. And that means, you know, with OG Anunoby in particular, the year before my last year there, when the team went to the conference semifinals as well, we saw Julius some, but he was coming off an injury right toward the end of the regular season. So he didn't have his best playoff run. So that will be the last thing that I need to see, the cohesion with Julius, with all of the Villanova guys, when they get into that playoff competition. But I believe very firmly that he's capable of making the necessary adjustments to be able to fit in with that group, as well as those guys being able to play well off of him. Because what the Knicks did miss in the playoffs last year was after, you know, Jalen Brunson was a guy who, you know, without the offense necessarily could go get you 30, 40 points. You need a second guy that when that offensive structure breaks down or people try to take Jalen Brunson away, and they were able to do that some in spots, who was going to be that second guy who could carry the load? I know that Julius Randle can do that. So he's got to be healthy again. And historically, he's been fairly healthy. So let's see how that looks. But they've got the toughness. They got the depth. And so I believe they can make a deep run.
So, you know, a couple episodes ago, I said to you that I think the Knicks are a bigger threat to the Celtics than the Sixers are. Mm-hmm. When I think about that Celtics-Knicks matchup that we may potentially see in the playoffs or whatever this season, I think the X factor for that series would be Julius Randle.
Yes.
Because the rest of it is just really good perimeter defenders guarding each other. But now you've got Julius Randle at the four being guarded by Jason Tatum, who is very strong, and he's been in that weight room and he stays in that weight room. But Julius...
He's not as strong as Julius Randle. Yeah.
Right? Yeah. I think... Like, even though he doesn't kind of quote-unquote fit in with the Villanova guys and what they do, so on and so forth, and some people think that it's time to move on from Julius in New York, I think that he would be the X factor if you're going to take on the reigning champions and try and eliminate them.
Here's what I'm going to say about the last comment you made about Julius and a lot of fans or people wanting to move on from Julius Randle. I've said this time and time again, Mo. Okay, if you want to move on from him, who you going to get this better? The reason that you can get via trade this better than Julius Randle. And I haven't heard of that trade yet. I hadn't seen it. Maybe there's one that's on the horizon that we haven't discussed. But look, the guy has been a three-time, in the last 6 years there, the last 5 years there, has been a three-time All-Star, two-time All-NBA player.
Mm-hmm.
So that's major production and major talent.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't just discard that without having a plan to get another player at that level or very close to that level and expect, you know, your team to be better.
Yeah, I think a lot of it for the fans is just a case of someone being out of sight, out of mind. Because they had somewhat a playoff run that was, I think it was a good playoff run considering the injuries that they had. They had a very
excellent,
good playoff run.
No question.
But because Julius wasn't there at all, he's kind of out of mind. And they think, well, we did all of this with these injuries. If we're adding Mikal Bridges and OG's healthy and Mitchell Robinson's healthy, we can win the whole thing without even remembering or even considering adding Julius as well.
This is a message to a lot of my New York folks, and especially some New Yorkers that are in the media. New Yorkers tend to love the big names, the star names. But let's break down this Knicks team. When Jalen Brunson was first signed with New York, there, you know, the fan base weren't saying, you know, they liked the player, they respected him, but he wasn't the quote unquote big star name. A couple years later, here we are now. He's the biggest name in New York sports. He's rivaling Aaron Judge and all those guys now. So he's become a star in that system in New York. When we first signed Julius Randle years ago, you know, a few years ago, he hadn't been an all-star yet. He grew and evolved into that all-star, all-NBA player. Now you go in and add OG Anunoby, who is in a great system for him. You trade for Mikal Bridges, you know, who's a great complimentary player. You've got Josh Hart. You've got Dante DiVincenzo. You got depth. You got Miles McBride, Mitchell Robinson there. And I'm going to compare it a little bit team came together a little bit differently this, but my time with the Detroit Pistons, I used to say this all the time. We were a very deep team, but we were devoid of, quote unquote, the known stars or the huge names in the sport. You know, when we got those, we put that team together, Chauncey Billups, we were his 16 when we signed him as a free agent. We traded for Rip Hamilton. We traded for Rasheed Wallace. We got Ben Wallace in the sign and trade for Grant Hill. And when that happened, people barely even knew Ben Wallace. But all those guys came together and became all-stars in their own right and came and developed into a legitimate championship team that went to six straight conference finals. So it doesn't have to always be done with these huge names. And again, and I can't stress enough with this group, the cohesion, and you talked about it before. They've got two great wing defenders now. They've got all of the components. They've got the wing defense. They've got a point guard. They've got an excellent defensive center. They've got a second scorer who's an all-star in Julius Randle, and they've got plenty of shooting on the roster. This team can be very dangerous. The thing that they have to do, and we saw it last year, and we say this every year, and this is part of the luck in terms of trying to win a championship, is you got to stay healthy.
Mm-hmm.
If this team stays healthy, I can tell you one thing about this guy, and I know I've been away from New York over a year now, but one thing I know enough about those guys in that locker room, they're not going to be afraid of the Boston Celtics. I can tell you that much, or anybody else in the Eastern Conference. The Boston Celtics are going to have to beat them. The Knicks will not be beat based on, this is the Boston Celtics defending champions. No, they're going to be wired. They're wired mentally saying, okay, we're ready. We're coming here. We're ready to rumble.
Mm-hmm.
What you going to do, Boston? Because they're not going away. They're going to have to beat them.
And as a fan of the Celtics, I actually hate how much I like this Knicks team. Because I really like this team. Like everything we talk about, defense, teamwork, this is my bag.
Yeah.
Let's go back to Jalen Brunson, though. Now with leaving all that money on the table, despite not being a player who's got, like we saw Anthony Edwards last week sign an 8-figure shoe deal with Adidas, whereas Jalen Brunson's not kind of the face of a sneaker company, even though he is going to be more prominent in some campaigns moving forwards. But do you expect to see Jalen Brunson now on every single billboard in New York with every single company? Like, I don't want to see that man ever pay for a meal anywhere in New York long as he lives.
Let me tell you, and you know what, Mo? I don't believe he will. Jalen Brunson could walk into any restaurant in New York City, not only now and in the short term, but for as long as he's there. He is going to be one of the most beloved New York Knicks of this era for sure. And so, and I believe that the business community in New York will rally behind him, will observe and see what he's done in terms of his sacrifice for the team and for this organization and showing the belief in the organization and in the city itself he will have a number of people, whether it be on Wall Street or whoever's trying to look for great endorsers of brands in that New York area. I'm sure there's no shortage of opportunities that will be coming his way, and he should do very well with them, in my opinion.
I have a pitch for Jalen Brunson, whoever does his brand deals. This is the commercial you need to do. It's with MasterCard.
Okay.
Have you ever seen the MasterCard Priceless campaign? For example, it'll say like tickets to the Super Bowl, $800. Seeing your team win, priceless. That's the thing. They need to do an advert, a commercial, where it's leaving $100 million on the table, crazy. Winning a championship with your best friends, priceless. And it's just a picture of the Villanova guys lifting Mario B. There you go, MasterCard. I will send you my invoice in the post.
Yeah, I was getting ready to say that, Mo. I mean, that's a great pitch. And they end up doing that. They need to look no further than coming to give you a cut of that.
Hell yeah, because I'll tell you one thing, Momunsi comes with a price.
Exactly. Absolutely.
That's what they should do if the Knicks win a championship. That's the marketing campaign. That's the marketing campaign they should do. But aside from that, you know, I think it's very nice to see a player whose sole thing is not money driven, because we've seen guys, and I'm not going to say specific names, but we've seen guys take max contracts in places they don't want to be, for example, and then later on have a strop and demand their way out. So they're still making their max money and then they force their way where they want to go.
And
we've
seen
guys leave teams that have treated them well just to go and compete, but they still have to take the max money. Where Jalen Brunson has said, winning is the most important thing here.
Yeah.
And
there's no question.
I don't recall ever seeing that to this degree. So he has my full respect.
Best thing I can tell you about Jalen Brunson, you know, the year I've spent with him, he is truly a high character young man and who exhibits extreme professionalism each and every day. And, you know, what you see is what you get. And you know, he is a humble presence too. You know, he is a guy, as you can see him doing something like this as well. I mean, he's not a huge ego guy or anything like that. He's all about the right stuff. He's about winning, and he's about, you know, maximizing himself and doing the very best he can every, you know, each and every day. So that's the one thing that you can rest assured about him. And the New York people know this. And obviously, you know, Leon Rose and company know him very well. They've known him since he was a very young kid. I mean, since he was born, essentially, because Leon represented his dad. That was his first client in Rick Brunson. So there's a very close-knit tie there with that whole group that is obviously been very helpful to all sides. And it's given Jalen enjoys an environment that very few pro athletes get. You know, when you start looking at the associations and relationships throughout the building, you know, the head coach there, Tom Thibodeau, has known him since he was a very young kid, because he coached his dad, Rick. You know, obviously Rick is on the staff there as an assistant coach. And I could, you know, mention a relationship with Leon, who's known him since he was very little and was his agent, and Leon's son represents him. So when you have that type of continuity, closeness, and trust that exists amongst all those parties, I mean, you're going to get the very best out of that player. And I mean, it's paid off in great dividends for all those associated with that Knicks franchise.
So usually when a player signs a deal, we talk about the impact it will have on the court. But I think we've kind of covered that a whole bunch and we've seen what he's been doing on the court. But I wanted to talk about the ramifications of this deal for the rest of the NBA. Because we've heard that Mikal Bridges will probably take less on his contract with the Knicks to accommodate this. But around the rest of the league, I have two questions for this. Is number one, do you think this is going to start a trend of superstar players taking less money? Because I don't see that happening. But number two, how does this then affect negotiations between the players and the team owners when they come back to the next collective bargaining agreement, if they're going to say, hey, look, you guys don't even want the max contracts anymore. You guys are leaving money on the table, so we ain't going to give you that.
Yeah. Well, I generally believe that this will be an outlier, like I said, especially to the amount of money that we're talking about here.
But if they win two or three.
Yeah, no, right. I get that. But the reason why I'm still saying we'll be an outlier is because of what I just mentioned before, because of the uniqueness of the relationships that exist here in this situation. Unless you have something like that that happens again with a star player, I just don't see the players, the representation, people around them sacrificing that much money. Can I see, the days of the LeBron James and Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh agreeing to take a couple million dollars less a piece so they can all come together? Yeah, I can see that happening. But when you're talking about a guy essentially sacrificing $37 million a year over the next 3 years, when you break it down, $113 million, I just don't see that level of you know, sacrifice coming from in any star player in the near future. So by the time the next collective bargaining agreement comes up again, there will be far more, you know, more players that are opting to take the biggest salary possible. And then you'll have Jalen Brunson's deal over on one side. So, you know, okay, yeah, the owners can point to that one deal, but there'll probably be 30 deals over on the other side that are saying, hey, no, we're taking all the money. So
I want to end with this, because this brings up a very interesting question. How much is an NBA championship worth? I would love to do an anonymous poll of every player in the NBA and saying, how much money would you have to leave on the table and you would be comfortable with that if you knew you were going to win the championship that year?
Great question, Mo. I mean, obviously, economically for the team in the city, winning the championship means a lot. And it means a lot for each player, but on varying degrees. You know, for your, you know, star players, it's going to help them get even more off the court, you know, develop more off the court revenue streams. You know, for your role players, it's going to help them maybe go out, and if they can't get it staying with you, going out in the free agency and get bigger contracts, because you've shown that you can contribute to a winner, a championship team. Because again, we experienced that in Detroit. We had a few guys who were backups on our championship teams that went out that summer and got big contracts right after we won the NBA title. Mehmet Okur was one. He was our sixth man, and Mike James was our seventh man coming off the bench as a guard. They both went out and got big deals coming right off the championship. So that comes to mind right away. And each and every year you can see that. So that's what it really means. And then just from a legacy standpoint, you know, there's only been like say 5,000 guys in that played NBA basketball in the history of the NBA. And then when you start breaking the number down, and I don't have the exact number now to find out how many players have been part of winning the NBA championship, now you're talking about a lot smaller number, and a lot, you know, you got a much smaller club, more exclusive club. So the memories of that, you know, like you mentioned for the MasterCard commercial, talking about being priceless, they can provide some priceless memories for all the hard work and dedication that these players put into their craft to be able to walk away one day from their career and say, hey, I was an NBA champion.
It's also what you dream about.
Yes.
I got the data here from 4 years ago. Out of the 4,509 NBA players who have ever played in the NBA, 512 of them have won at least one NBA championship. That's 11.36%. So yes, it's an exclusive club. And it's kind of the thing you dream of when you're growing up, winning an NBA championship. I can't even imagine how it would feel to actually win one. I don't know how much money I'd leave on the table for that. I mean, if I made it, I'd probably play for free. You know what I mean? I just want to play. I'm just happy to be here.
The interesting thing here, Mo, obviously, he's, you know, doing this based on his firm and strong belief that they have enough there to win and get it done. But as we know, there's no guarantee.
No guarantees.
Because if there was a guarantee of that, you might see more people looking to do that, maybe sacrifice a little more because they, especially a star player, because they may believe that they can, again, like I made the point before, recoup it through some different revenue streams.
Yeah.
But you can make all the right moves. You can work your, you know, work so hard and be prepared for the season coming in and the ball not bounce right for you.
Yeah.
Or like I said, the injuries. There's so many things. And look, there's 29 other teams out there too that are going to be standing in your way. So it's a fascinating thing to watch. I'm pulling for him. I hope nothing but the best for him. That's for sure. But it's going to be really, you know, it's going to be a really interesting thing to watch develop. And my belief is that however it goes down, Jalen Brunson, just again, you know, knowing him, the little that I do know him, I believe he's going to be at peace with however it falls out, because that's just the kind of individual he is. He's very grounded.
Mm-hmm. I love that. I love that. Nothing is guaranteed in this world, but I can guarantee you guys one thing. If you subscribe to the show on YouTube, Spotify, or Apple, or wherever you get your podcast from, your days will improve, because you can hear Scott and I breaking down everything. And Mr. Armstrong will be on his way back very soon, so don't worry about that. I can guarantee that that will not win you a championship, but it will increase the quality of your day-to-day life when you want to hear about the NBA. Scott, I appreciate the knowledge. These were some real gems that you dropped for us. We'll be back very soon with more. Let us know in the Discord, which is linked below, which teams you want to hear us talking about, because the offseason is here, and I know Team USA are in action right about now. We're going to go watch them play Australia, so maybe we'll talk a little international basketball as well soon.
That'd be great. And like you say, Mo, hey, get buckets. You like that? Let's get buckets. Exactly.
Get buckets.
Get buckets, right?